Hello and welcome, or welcome back, to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Adam Five, and this is episode 14. And it's a banner episode. It's a red letter day. It's a highly positive. A highly positive, but unfortunately not tractor trailer truck free episode. And I'm all jazzed up about beginning it because we have listener feedback. Not only in the form of an email, a most excellent email, but also in the form of an audio, my very, very first audio response to the show. And as promised in other episodes, emails, acknowledgments, shout-outs, audios, anything that comes from out there to me and IDDFOS gets displayed, trotted out, and given as much thorough appreciation as it can be given here at the very opening of the show. Why should I wait to the end? And so right to it. This email letter is from the Norwegian Viking, Mr. T. And he writes, Dear Adam 5, I'm just guessing that after all the brilliant mini-dramas you sent to Dragon's Landing, Gamer the Podcasting, and Harp, your listener response must have exploded over the last week. Now, I've written back already to Mr. T and responded to this email, but I'm going to mention, as I'm reading this, in fact, my listener response hasn't been all that much in terms of volume. In terms of quality, it's been great. I got two wonderful responses from Digger Story, from Digger Poots and Patter at DiggerStory.com, and that's excellent. It was great. It was wonderful to get them. But in terms of volume and how many have written in to share their thoughts, still waiting for that to increase a bit. So it may come as a surprise or a shock, but there it is. To continue, Hi, I'm Thomas, known as Mr. T at DLIMB. I should translate that as Dragon's Landing Inn Message Board. I've just completed listening to all your podcasts. Well, not all. I only got half of the episodes or installments, parentheses, as you insist on calling them, close parentheses, number 9 through 13 due to a download error, parentheses, my fault, don't worry. On 8-hour trips, even half an episode is brilliant entertainment. Now, after listening to 13 of your episodes, I have a lot on my mind about the subjects you bring up and your podcast. So bear with me. This mail may be long, and you don't have to read it on your podcast if you don't feel like it.
Of course I feel like it. Listener feedback. It's good listener feedback. Need more of the same. But I'll continue.
First of all, don't be so hard on yourself. You are doing fine. I love to listen to, quote, your own ignorance, unquote, as you modestly put it.
Well, cool. Thank you.
You said in episode 12 that you didn't find your way of thinking and ideas original. Well, it's pretty hard or close to impossible to be 100% original. Most often an idea has sprung from some place, event, or saying heard or experienced before. As you so delicately put it in the courtroom between Heroinus, I have to go back.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to that and make sure I pronounce it properly. It's actually the poet Horace. When I was tracing back the origin of the phrase carpe diem, I wanted to find out what the earliest known written record of that was in order to do the little mini-drama from from the opening of episode 5, and I might not have pronounced it quite right. So he's got heroines here. It's actually the poet Horace. I'll just substitute that here.
As you so delicately put it in the courtroom between Horace and Pink Floyd, parentheses, brilliant, by the way.
Thank you.
To seize the day is not a new way of thinking. Pink Floyd probably heard it from Horace. Horace probably heard it from his father, who heard it from his grandfather, who heard it from his great-grandfather, and so on. Talk about infinity. I work as a graphics designer, and this is how I put it. An original idea is always a slight variation of a cliché.
That's a really slick way of putting it.
The creative person will describe or illustrate by words, music, or pictures, a story, feeling, ideas, or a universe that he has experienced, heard, or seen. But he will fluctuate slightly from the original and probably combine it with other ideas, thereby creating something new. Oh dear, I'm starting to sound as deep as you now. I hope you understood that.
No, that came across loud and clear. It's a very good point, and very well put.
My point is that the important thing is to pass the notions, ideas, and stories on so that they don't fade away in textbooks or in the depths of the human psyche. The Da Vinci Code is a good example of that. An old notion that was close to dead, but thanks to Mr. Brown, a 2,000-year-old suspicion is now back in everyone's mind. Jesus was in love with Mary, who might have had a child with him. It's important to talk about, discuss, and remember some issues. Neglect is a bad thing. If it's important to you, you can bet your life on it that someone else out there finds it important too.
Well, as I said in my response to Mr. T, that pretty much is what International Detective Dragons from Outer Space is driven on for the most part. And it's what drives me to try and, it drives me try and remain on topics that affect everyone, that are kind of universally mysterious. As I told him, he pretty much nailed it with that. Back to the letter.
I love your ranting. I like that you speak your mind and put it on the web for anyone to listen to. Hey, if people don't want to hear it, they don't have to. No one's making them. Trust your ignorance and keep ranting.
Well, I don't suppose there's going to be a problem with that. There's any number of things that I'll find myself going off on an emotional tangent with, and hopefully I can at least make them important enough or interesting enough for people to listen to, and I'm very glad, Mr. T, that you get some kind of entertainment and like them.
So, on a lighter note, your voice acting is amazing. Keep making the mini-drama bits. They are fantastic.
Thank you.
As an RPG gamer, I'd love to learn how to do that. I can tell you've been working in theater for a long time, but I'd never guess you worked as a scenery carpenter.
As far as earning a living goes, I've done scenic carpentry, I've done set design, I've done lighting design, hanging lighting instruments, welding, loading trucks. What does that have to do with Mr. T's letter? Shut up, Adam. Keep reading.
You seem to know a lot about drama, voice acting, and theater. So why not make part of your show, or at least a segment, about this? Like Character of the Week, for example. The villain with his evil laugh. The farm Yankee with the yanked? Yankee. Yokel. Not sure about that, Mr. T. Let us know what... I'm going to assume Yankee. The farm Yankee with the southern accent. Yokel. I don't know. Moving on. The German Inquisitor, and so on. Since you seem to identify with gamers, why not try and help us with our role-playing?
And, in fact, I'm going to take that suggestion and make at least, if not all of 14, I'm not sure yet, and I never know how these are going to time out, if not all of 14, and at least a good portion of it, is going to deal with that subject to continue.
Kay, can't be all positive and complimentary. Here comes the criticism. First, I beg you, please, do not play another episode with a higher sample rate. It's like listening to Chip and Dale for 50 minutes. Parentheses, put them both in a kitchen blender. You have a nice voice. It kind of sounds like the voice of the computer in 2001 A Space Odyssey.
I have actually been told that before. That actually echoes back to something like 20 years ago when I was doing monologues in acting class. The point is well taken, Mr. T. I do agree, as I responded in the letter. I don't know what I was thinking. I wanted to listen to it to review it, and I used the speed feature on this little recorder I'm holding just to get through it faster. And all I heard myself doing was ranting and carrying on and whining and not saying anything of particular use to anyone. Nothing, not coming up with any kind of a solution or offering any real hope, except in a few places here and there. And I thought to myself, you know what? If you're going to do that, you might as well just be a chipmunk. You want to rant, go ahead and rant, but you're going to be a chipmunk because I don't want to hear it in slow motion. And I didn't really stop to consider that that might not be all that kind to people who are trying to just listen to a show. And I didn't stop to consider what the effects on the human nervous system would be of having to listen to that for that long. And I do apologize, and I have promised Mr. T, and I promised anyone else listening that I will not do that again. Maybe for a 5-minute stint for whatever reason that I can't even imagine now, but certainly not for an entire podcast. Chip and Dale, those are excellent characters to pick out, too.
Shall we? Surely. Let's.
No, don't put them in a blender. They're great. They're wonderful. You want to put somebody in a blender? Put Alvin and the Chipmunks in a blender. I'm sorry. Back to the letter. I was reading a letter from a listener, wasn't I?
Second, why aren't you on iTunes? It would save me a lot of work if I could just subscribe to your podcast there. Now, I'm not a podcaster, but I think it's free.
I don't know. I should be on iTunes. I suppose it's as simple as going there and registering and giving my information and including the iTunes tags in my RSS feed. I'm gonna look into that. I'm gonna try and make sure I'm actually available through iTunes.
Well, grats, you read it all.
Thank you.
That's all for now. I'd like to go back to the topic of good versus evil at a later time, maybe next week.
As I told you in my response, any time, any subject, love to hear from you.
Till then, great show. Looking forward for the next installment. Happy recording. The Norwegian Viking, Mr. T. And he ends with, long live the Amiga. Long live Amiga, the Amiga computer.
Can't thank you enough, Mr. T. That's wonderful, excellent, very well written, very well considered. And criticisms? No, those weren't criticisms. Those were facts. I shouldn't have done an entire episode on chipmunk speed. And I should be on iTunes. Those weren't criticisms. Those were good points. And thanks for making them. He also, I should mention, the Norwegian Mr. T. I have his full real name, but I'm not going to say it on the air because I've actually sent stuff into some places, either through forums or podcasts, last year I think it was, and they actually said my real full name on the internet, and I don't know, it creeped me out for some reason. I didn't want that to happen. There's a reason people use handles, and I try to respect that. And if they don't particularly care and say, go ahead, use my full name, well, then I've got their permission, and then I'll do that. But I'm just going to say I truly appreciate having gotten that email. In on the ground floor, as it were, and you can be too. What was I about to say? I was about to say, I took a look at my Frapper map, and there he is. The Norwegian Mr. T on my Frapper map. That brought my Frapper map membership up to 3 members. Myself, Digger Story, and Mr. T. Now, whose fault is that? Mine. I need to tell people that I have a Frapper map. I need to tell people that they can go to Anim5 at anim5.com. Click on the little yellow dummy that'll take you to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. And just scroll down a bit and you'll see in that right-hand column a little link to click to get to my Frapper map. If you've joined others, why not join this one? Need the numbers to grow. It's mainly so that I get more of an impression that the listeners out there are not only are not in my imagination. So thank you, Mr. T, for that. He also pointed out to me something that I missed entirely. Now, I sent a piece of audio to Dragon's Landing Inn. Hopefully, you've gone over and checked out the Dragon's Landing podcast with Chuck and Lonnie. I play their promos and have played their promos since episode 3, and they're certainly a really good listen and lots of fun. Very informative on role-playing games. And if you heard last episode, episode 13, you heard a kind of a It's a Wonderful Life variation, a 3-minute version of it with the, as Mr. T would put it, the Norwegian, a variation on a cliche. Speaking of coming up with original ideas, it was played at the top of their show, and if I had half a brain cell, I would have gone and looked on the forums to see if there were any kind of Dragon's Landing forum membership response to it, and there was. I just didn't actually have the presence of mind to go and check it out, and Mr. T was kind enough to send me the link to that. And thank you folks for the kind words. If you're listening to this particular show coming over from Dragon's Landing Inn, thank you very much for the kind comments on the mini dramas. I'm certainly going to do more. I don't know what they're going to be about or who they're going to be sent to, and I'm going to thank anyone that plays them in advance because they're great fun to do. They're a whole hell of a lot of fun for me to do. They take a bit more work than just sitting here and recording, obviously, but I'm usually pretty happy with the results. I get lots of fun producing them, and I have to thank the people that play them, because you're talking about something like 6 or 7 minutes. I mean, I started out with something like 4 minutes on one of them, 3 minutes on another, and then House of the Harping Monkey, bless him, I sent him a 7 minute long thing. And when you get somebody playing your audio, that's a very high compliment, and it's very kind of them, because that's their podcast time. That's their production time. And it's not, you certainly can't just send something out like that and say, here, play this. Or, it's something that that I offer and hope that they do. And it's been very gratifying, and I'm extremely happy that they found it good enough to make use of, because it's their time. So thank you all, anyone that has played them, will play them, or is playing them now. Speaking of playing audio, an audio. My first, and this comes to International Detector Dragons from Outer Space, from Does My Geek Look Big in This? It's Sarah. Let's play it now.
Hey, NM5, it's Sarah calling from Does My Geek. I've just listened to show number 13, and I just wanted to give you a call to say, it's really cool. I love your show. It's awesome. I'm going to go back and listen to some older ones now. I loved your rant. It made me laugh and it made me think, which is good. It's my favourite kind of podcast, does that. So don't worry about, it being different every time. I think it's cool. And I like your website too. Your website's really awesome. I spent ages just poodling around there. So I'd like to say to any of your listeners, if they've not been to NM5, then go there and check it out, because it's groovy. Anyway, that's me just rambling, so I'd better go anyway. Keep up the good work, and I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
And thank you very much, Sarah. Oh, dear. It's a train again. Don't blow the whistle. Please don't blow the whistle. Me and my timing. Thank you, Mr. Engineer. And thank you, Sarah, for my very first audio received. And I'll have you know, and I'll have any of the listeners know, that I was mouthing along the actual words that you said, because I've played it about, 42. I played it 42 times, because as I'd said in an earlier podcast, when I hear any kind of an accent, when I hear any kind of an accent from the United Kingdom, I go into a kind of catatonic euphoria. And then at some point I stop and realize, oh, someone said something there, but that was a British accent. Let's listen to it again. And thank you for the high praise and the kind words. And yeah, Anim5.com has a site by itself. The root set of pages there, that's been around since about 1998. And there's lots of fun stuff to look at and play with. And IDDFOS is a subpage of that I set up, obviously, as a supplement to this podcast. So thank you for recommending the show and the root site. And so, an excellent banner day. A wonderful start to episode 14, and I'm going to continue probably several hours from now. Does My Geek Look Big in This? Folks, go to doesmygeek.com. How could I forget that? That would be so unkind. Go to www.doesmygeek.com. Check out the Does My Geek Look Big in This podcast by Nev and Sarah. They talk about beer, and they talk about role-playing games, and they talk about movies, and all kinds of cool geek stuff that resonates with my way of thinking, and is quite enjoyable. Now, where was I? What was I going to say? I was going to say, I've got to stop now. I'm supposed to work today. And this was my lunch 45 minutes. And I will continue this several hours from now when I am off to do the weekly shopping. If you've heard earlier podcasts, you know that's kind of a pattern that I follow. And so back in a bit. Well, I was right. It is several hours later. And I want to say two things real quick before I forget, because that's what I do. I talk, I don't stop, and I forget.
I start a thought or a concept, I do a run-on sentence, I end up somewhere entirely different, and then awful, awful things happen. Or not. First thing, I forgot this, we're gonna just make one more mention here of Mr. T's letter. I forgot one of the most amusing parts of the whole thing. And that was the subject line. Subject line of the email was, urine gone. Never leave home without it. Made me laugh. Just wanted to throw that in there. Okay, done with that. Second thing. What was the second thing? There is a voice that I did not credit in one of the mini-dramas. It was very obviously, very, very obviously not my voice. It was the one sent to the House of the Harping Monkey, and it was the voice of the muse, Thalia, at the very end of that particular piece. And I'm going to go back and correct the page, I'm going to correct the schnotes on that particular show to credit who that voice belongs to. Or is it whom? That's Mrs. Annam 5. The voice of Thalia in that mini-drama was Mrs. Annam 5, the woman that keeps me out of jail and hides my madness from the villagers. Now, onto this topic. Which topic? The suggested topic. In that feedback, you know a lot about I'm paraphrasing here. If I know a lot about drama and theater and acting and all the rest of that stuff, maybe I should devote a segment of the program to helping our peers, helping people in their role play in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, well, I certainly would be more than glad to do that. I would consider it quite a useful thing to do and an accomplishment to be able to help role-playing game, role-play, performance, characterization. I don't know that I'd actually really be able to do that, and for several reasons. I'll start at the top, and this isn't really actually the biggest reason, because there's overlaps. There's very obvious overlaps between a theatrical stage performance or even a recorded voice acting performance and the kind of role play you would do at the gaming table. But just to top off the list, number one, I have not participated in a tabletop role playing game where I was actually there with people at the table since before 1985, and it was in fact so long ago that I don't even remember which year before 1985. So that's one thing. I don't consider role-playing online, where it's entered through text, to be even remotely the same thing. Well, maybe remotely the same thing. I mean, it's still the basic idea of you are playing a character, but the dynamics there are so thoroughly different. So the immediate experience isn't there. I know the basic concept behind the role-playing game, and I certainly understand what's being talked about when people are trying to play their characters during a campaign. But I'd have to say, if I were asked the question right now, how can I improve my skills in role-playing and vocal characterization at the table when I'm playing my character, I would have to say it depends, because there's a couple of different dynamics. I mean, the stuff that I've done, the mini-dramas that I've done, those vocalizations, those different character voices, they're not vastly different from a lot of what you may have done yourself, just in quick, simple outbursts when you're making a joke, because they're caricatures, they're extremes, they're stereotypes, and it's almost, I mean, thanks to the flood of media, it's almost second nature to most people that have been for most of their lives exposed to radio and television. It's second nature to pick out and detect when something fits and when it doesn't. There are different choices made. I'm going off into the ether here, aren't I? Let me give a specific example, one that leaps immediately to mind. They had a commercial years and years ago for some bread product. I don't know what it was, whether it was rolls or a special kind of butter loaf or English muffins, who cares? The company was Pepperidge Farms. And their campaign, their ad campaign for the longest time and slogan was Pepperidge Farm Remembers. And it was all built on the nostalgia bit. It was all built on the rustic, country, wholesome grandma, grandpa, back in the old days, this is how we made bread type of shtick. Now you go ahead and you go to a Pepperidge Farm production facility, you're not going to see Wilfred Brimley hand rolling dough or any of that crap. You're going to see machines and a bunch of underpaid people making sure the machines and the assembly line and the whatever. You're going to see modern production in a facility that's clean on the inside, dirty as hell on the outside, with nothing like a water wheel or a barn or a horse-drawn carriage or any of that stuff. And the commercial line was either a genuine old person or somebody doing the voice of an old person going on about, we use only the finest stone ground wheat, we wash our cows before we milk them, and just like grandma sets the pies on the windowsill, you're only going to get pure wholesome goodness, because Pepperidge Farm remembers. You know, the whole commercial had to be by this guy that had no teeth. It had to be. He had to sound like he had no teeth, even if, you know, he had perfect choppers. It evokes a voice like that, a stereotype, a caricature, evokes a set of images in you automatically, and they know that. I can give you another example, and this goes way back. If anybody recognizes this, then you're just as old as I am, if not slightly older. Columbia Records came out with one of them quick knockoff collections of classical music, pieces, snippets, segments of classical music on a four record set. It was sold as 120 music masterpieces, and they had standing there hawking this thing the British butler, the second British butler, not Sebastian Cabot, but the second British butler from, I don't even remember the name of the show. I'm proud that I don't remember the name of the show. It was a rotten show. Standing there saying, as they play one of the pieces, I'm sure you recognize this lovely melody as Stranger in Paradise. But did you know that it comes from the original Polovetian Dance No. 2 by Borodin? And then he goes on to talk about how lots of modern songs are based on classical pieces. And they were trying to sell this as this, you know, something that would just enrich your home with and turn all your kids into the intelligentsia of tomorrow. But there was an obvious reason that they picked this classy British butler type to sell the classical music. They're not going to pick a voice. They're not going to have one of the sopranos standing up there talking about,
Hey, you listen to Hungarian Rhapsody? You got class like nobody's business. You buy this record album set. Listen to what I'm telling you. You buy this record album set.
You're going to learn about Bach or Beethoven, or you're going to be a fucking loser all your life.
See, they can't do that. It doesn't evoke the same atmosphere. That stereotype, that caricature, doesn't really put across the same message. So what does that have to do with role play? Well, I'm not entirely sure. I suppose a part of it has to do with making either safe or unique choices. And part of the help, you know, as far as being able to help players with characterization and that kind of thing, I don't know how much of it you could actually get from me, but you could certainly get a lot from your GM. Now, this is an assumption on my part. This is a total assumption on my part. I'm told I should trust my ignorance. Well, I'm trusting it right now. If your GM sets up a setting wherein you've got a lot of freedom of choice as far as who you can be and how you can behave, you know, within reason, within the storyline, and within the setting, if the setting is realistic enough, you've got more choices for your character. Now, there's the online World of Warcraft thing. If you're a dwarf, you've got a Scottish accent. What that's about, I don't know. But you know what? It's become a stereotype. It's become a caricature. For whatever reason, at least in that game,
the dwarves that run around in there, at least the NPCs that have voice acting done for them. And I don't know how many other games this is true for. If anybody wants to write in and let me know, that'd be great. I wonder how often this appears. But the dwarves in there all have Scottish accents. What if you played a dwarf that had a French accent? Or what if you played a dwarf that didn't have a deep gravelly voice? Would that detract from the character, or would it make it more unique? If you're more comfortable with a certain character, vocal characterization, would it be easier to play that dwarf or that elf or whatever type of character you're trying to play? If you wanted to give the character an impediment, a speech impediment of some kind, would that help you get into the character? I mean, the bottom line is there's two bottom lines here. I mean, I'm going to go on about this a little bit further. I'm going to waste some more time comparing apples to oranges, but there's two bottom lines here. One is, if what you're doing as you perform at the gaming table, as you portray your character, if that is making the immersion into the role play, if that is making the world that's created by you and the 3, 4, 5, 8 other people that are there more real and more immersive, and it's assisting your character to either go in a direction that makes him or her more real, then obviously you're doing it right, especially if you're having fun doing it. If you're hearing that voice, because every time a performer does this, there's, and it doesn't matter who it is, there's that little piece of you that sits back, either out in the balcony looking down or on your shoulder or wherever, there's somebody sitting back monitoring your performance inside you. There's a piece of you that's watching it saying, okay, oh, that was real good. Oh, that sucked. No, don't do it that way. Oh, why did you say that? Yeah, oh, that sounded great. That came out great. Can you do that again? There's a critique taking place all the time. You're self monitoring, and you're concentrating on how the performance is going. And there's a fine balance there between spending a lot of energy on that and spending enough energy on that and spending enough energy on, well, yeah, the portrayal was terrific and the voice characterization was fantastic, but would my character really have done that or said that? And does this help me go in the direction that I want to go? And how does it affect the other players? If I spend the entire evening on stage perfecting my performance, are they ever going to invite me back again? I mean, I suppose it's a delicate balance. You guys are going to have to fill me in here, because having been away from it for so long, I think I need a refresher from you as far as just how far performance goes, how important it is, depending on what game or group you're playing in, and whether you find a convincing and a well-done performance, whether you find that to be better for the game overall and for everybody present, or whether it just isn't that important. What was the other bottom line? Oh, the other bottom line is about acting in general. If I learned anything in as many years as I've been involved in this, if I've learned anything, it's just a very, very simple truth. It doesn't matter how many books you've read about it. It doesn't matter how many classes you've taken. It doesn't matter how many actors you've imitated, studied, watched, listened to. The bottom line is, acting is lying. That's what it is. Acting is lying. They hit the nail on the head in Galaxy Quest. And it was just very simple and straightforward. And I mean, I knew it for years, but it was well expressed there. It's deception. Acting a character, or in a period, as far as a certain age, like acting in Commedia dell'arte or Shakespeare or Greek tragedy, that's lying with style. But the truth is, what you're trying to do is portray something that is untrue. You're trying to get across a message that is fiction. And you started when you were in grade school. When you were in first, second, third grade or something like that, and you just absolutely positively didn't want to go to school that day, and you were going to convince your mom or your dad that you were sick. And you either did a brilliant, convincing performance that actually had them fooled, or you convinced yourself that you did a brilliant performance that had them fooled when in fact they saw right through you and just figured, oh, what the hell, give the kid a break, but make him stay in his room all day, teach him a lesson, like that was a punishment. But yeah, that's acting, which is lying. See, the gods agree with me. I don't know whether you picked up on that thunder. Okay, how about me shutting up now before I go into even deeper into this stuff? Because I've reached my first location, going to do a little shopping, and while I'm doing the shopping, you'll be hearing some podcast promos. Back in a bit. And I'm back, down at the first location. And I have to pause a little bit here before we continue with this topic. What exactly is this topic, Adam? Performing. Performance and vocal characterization in role-playing games and the improvement thereof. I've got to mention something here, and I think it's important, at least for me anyway, because I'm going on a bit. I'm delivering this information, this advice, as if it's some kind of artistic word from on high, as if I somehow am qualified to instruct anyone in how to be an actor. Well, I suppose I'm no less qualified than some of the people that instructed me when I was in college. Credentials, you know, big deal. I've got a fine arts degree in speech, theater, and technical theater. Now, you know what? All you got to do at a state school is show up and pay the money, and you get one too. It's more a question of whether I was willing to swallow the student loan costs over the years or not. I'm not saying it was, you know, a piece of cake, but that doesn't qualify you. That doesn't qualify me to tell anybody how they can act. I'm not even positive, and I never was, and I'm still not sure that you can actually teach acting. I wasn't back then, in the very early 80s, and I'm still not now. And the other thing I should say is, I went the route of performing. I went the route of acting in my mid-20s. I got the Equity card. I'm still 45 minutes away from Manhattan. I did a showcase performance in Manhattan. I participated. I ran sound in one of the college extension setups, and I worked as a performer and got paid for it for about 2 years with children's theater, 2.5, 3 years. But that was a long time ago, and I would not call myself an actor. It's like, you know what? I'm not an actor. I couldn't do it. I do not have the bravery to live that kind of life, and believe you me, you need it. So I'm thinking, as I'm talking about all these things that I have picked up and that I've learned and that I consider to be true and maybe useful information to know as far as performing goes, I keep thinking of people that I know that are still in it, that are still performing on stage when they can and making their living at it as best they can. I don't have that kind of bravery. So to be a genuine actor, means to be looking for work for the rest of your life. That's essentially what it is. You are always going to be looking for work. And there are people out there that have the love of the art in them enough that that's what they choose to do. They're talented enough to at least keep themselves alive between the performance and the table waiting. But I couldn't do that. I had to leave that. That was just too much. And part of what they deal with is what makes them, is what increases their talent. They don't just learn their craft by practice or osmosis. They learn it when they're off stage. You know, the expression, I've suffered from my art, that's not an expression. All right, now that I've gotten off on that tangent, I need to get back to where I was headed. I forgot where that was. You know, I even made notes for this section, and I can't remember a single thing. I certainly don't want to crash the car here referring to the notes, so I think I better stop for a second. This may be a good point for just one more podcast promo. Back in a sec. Alrighty then, where was I going to go next with this? I think I was going to get back to the gaming table. And hopefully you guys can fill me in on just how far it goes and how much attention and energy is put into it, because it seems to me you're walking a fine line, or you've got to draw a line that you decide to cross or not cross, where you stop playing a role-playing game and you start producing a radio drama. Because I imagine it could get that way. I'm thinking to myself, if you get two or three people around the table who are so into the story and are working, and you know what? That's not to say it's a bad thing. If you're having a good time doing it, and if the GM, recognizes that you're having a good time doing it, and everybody at the table is into it, what the hell? Press record. But it's a decision, I guess, that kind of has to be made. That's also part of what kind of help the GM can give you. Just to let you know, I imagine to let you know just how heavy the RP is, and I don't know, you know, I don't know what game styles are out there and play styles are out there that allow for that kind of intensity and energy to be put into performing your characters, everyone around the table. And, of course, you know, what do you do when the one person that's there with the sheet and the dice and is looking around going, are these people nuts? All I wanted to do was level my character up and get through this campaign. You know, is that person having a good time? And how do you draw that person in? Well, that's for the people that I've been listening to in these other podcasts to talk about, because they know what they're talking about. That's for Chuck and Lonnie and Nev and Sarah and Sasha and Caroline and Jeff and, oh, how many other names are there? That's for them to do, to talk about. They know what they're talking about. And so I'll stay away from that, but it was just something I thought I'd better bring up. Vocal characterization, finding that character voice and producing it. If you're going to do it, by all means, have some fun when you're doing it. Try not to let the reproduction of a specific voice overpower your character. One of the things that you can do just to loosen up, and this could work whether you're doing vocalizations or not, it's a trick I used to see a brilliant performer used to use, and I don't think he even did it on purpose, he just did it. Whether it was his own pet, cat, dog, or someone else's, anytime he was within the vicinity of a dog, a cat, or any kind of pet with eyes, a bird, he would supply the voice for it. Begging at the table, walking around, running around in the yard, anything. He would come up with whatever kooky, weird, squeaky cartoon voice he could come up with and just supply dialogue for the animal. It'd be sitting at the table or sitting near the table looking up at somebody eating something, and he'd be saying like, just give me a little taste. Come on, just give me a little scrap. You son of a... I hate you. You ate that whole thing, you bat. You wouldn't give me nothing. Yeah, well, okay. No, you don't pet me. I walk away now. That kind of thing. And if you look, I mean, if you keep the eyes on the animal and you just listen to the commentary, 9 times out of 10 it was hysterical. He had a special skill for it. And it was really quite enjoyable, but try that. Just try that. Just to loosen up. If there isn't a cat, or there isn't a dog, or there isn't a pet of any kind in the vicinity, another loosening up exercise is to grab 3 or 4 items out of the cabinet or out of the fridge, preferably out of the cabinet, just so that you don't have to worry about something, you know, getting warm. Any product, anything at all, and read the label as if you're doing the commercial for it. And it doesn't have to be a commentator's voice. It could be any kind of voice, whatever voice you choose. If you decide you want to do it in the style of a pirate, go overboard. As an old instructor used to tell us, you know, if you're going to trip coming in the door, don't just trip and then pretend it didn't happen, then continue on stage. Do a 40-foot wipeout. Fall, tumble, roll, smash your head on the table, do whatever. Be wrong, but strong. So, yeah, go overboard. Push it to the limit. I heard some outtakes. I think it was outtakes from when the Mad 3 were working on their recording of a special promo spot for Vegas After Midnight for the House of the Harping Monkey. And the outtakes were essentially where Jeff was defining what over the top means. Do that! For crying out loud, go ahead! What, are you going to lose a check? Nobody's paying you. And it helps to loosen you up a little bit. You know, grab the box of tea bags and go ahead and do it in the voice of Scooby-Doo, or do it in the voice of Peter O'Toole, or do it in any voice that you feel comfortable doing it in. Do it in a voice that you know you suck at, and just loosen up. Let it flow, let it happen, and you'll hit on something. You'll hit on something that you're comfortable with. Now, the thing about, if you're really interested in making it accurate, and you want it to sound really good, I was like, I want my French character to really have a French accent that's very convincing, or I want my British explorer in Cthulhu, in the Call of Cthulhu, to really sound like a British explorer, or doctor, or whatever. You have a built-in, everybody has a built-in sensibility as to what sounds right and what doesn't. It's accents and dialects are very much, very much like music. Jazz, classical, big band, rock and roll. I mean, they all have their musical style and vocabulary. They have that sound that you know is right and fits and that you know is wrong. A dialect or an accent, you can hear, and you know it, you can hear it when someone's doing it badly or when someone's doing it well. If someone's doing it well, generally you think, wow, they got somebody from, or they got a ringer from London to do this commercial. And it could be somebody that was born in Austin, Texas, that just studied all their life and can do all these accents. I mean, there's some people out there that can kick it with this stuff, and they do it for a living. Again, I don't have that kind of bravery. But if you really, really want to perfect that, then the best method for me has always been to hear it, to listen to it, to become immersed in the sound of it. It's like learning a musical style. If you're interested in learning any dialect, any British accent from all over the United Kingdom, I very highly recommend getting hold of the audio recordings of the Terry Pratchett novels of the Discworld series, any of the ones read by Stephen Briggs and any of the ones read by Nigel Planer. I mean, I have listened to those over and over and over again since I got them. I just worn them out. And obviously, I mean, any of the old Monty Python, of course, you'll hear, you can become immersed in that too. But there's all kinds of audio available to come up not only with dialects, but with styles. There's thousands of hours of old time radio out there. If you're interested in learning about any of the special periods between the 20s, the 40s, the 50s, you can generally get the authentic, the real thing, in audio on MP3. Now, there's sites galore that sell this stuff. Some of the places are selling whole series, and this is how I got my collection, because I've got about 1,500 hours worth of old-time radio on MP3. Selling whole series on a CD, the entire collection of the existing recordings of, say, some kind of Flying Ace thing from the 30s. And you get a feel not only for a vocal style, you get a feel for a genre, you get a real historical education too. But if you pick up on accents and you really want to be accurate with them, for me, again, This has worked for me. It's to listen to them over and over again and try to repeat them and try to copy them and then not try, just listen. For some people, they need that textbook. They need that little guide, and those are out there too that indicate which consonant and vowel sounds need to be substituted for others in which situations. That, me trying to memorize something like that would drive me nuts. I'd never be able to do it. But apparently it works for some people because they're still selling those books. So you know when it doesn't work and you know when it works. You can hear it. And a friend of mine used to, I didn't know him actually that well, but he was one of the musical accompanists for a production I was in that required some kind of a pipe organ. It was a real melodrama, but he hated learning keyboard. He didn't want to learn the piano. His mother made him, and he was very resentful of his mother for making him practice because he didn't want to practice. And one of the ways he used to get back at her was if she had company over and he was supposed to be practicing, he would play whatever it was he was learning, almost to the last note, or something that he knew very well. She'd be sitting in the next room talking with company, and he'd start playing, dun 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 dun, and then he'd go on to play, dun 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 dun, and he would do that song after song, leaving the last note off. Just driving them crazy. So when it works, when you hear that accent, which is very much like music, it has its own melody, it has its own lilt, it has its own tone. You can tell when it's played right, and you can tell when it's played wrong. How helpful is that? I don't know how helpful I've been thus far. I'm going to take a look at my notes again. Check out Game of the Podcasting episode 17, I believe it was. They covered acting as well. And they got into the Stanislavski school of method acting and covered the ideas like working from the inside out in terms of emotional realism and from the outside in. Again, we're getting into a situation here where, you know, how much do you want to concentrate on being the performer of your character, the realistic performer of your character, as opposed to moving the game along and just getting where you need to be with your character so that you're comfortable and can realistically do what you need to do without going for an Academy Award or a recording that can be sold on eBay. I don't know. I think it's time for another break. I got to go inside. I've been sitting here in the car while I should be shopping. Shame on me. Back in a bit. Okay, so to further elaborate, going back to something you said, Mr. T, something you said in your letter, it was appreciated. It was a compliment on my voice acting, but and really, in any commercial you hear, in any of those mini dramas I did, and anything that to your ear really sounds good, there's something, of course, to bear in mind, and that's the fact that when that's being produced, you're in total control of what the end result's going to be. I mean, there's no way in hell I'd release how badly I sucked on certain takes while in production of any of the mini-dramas I've done. And the outtakes, the flubs, and we're talking about a script that I wrote that was right in front of me, waiting to be read. And then, you know, still, it had to be edited together with software, with the crap chopped out. You don't have that, you know, we're talking about a totally different dynamic at a gaming table. You're dealing with a totally different thing. You're supposed to come up with your character's responses, whether they're a reaction to something or they're an attempt to persuade someone else to do something, or just to convey information. You've got to come up with all that on the fly. There's no script. And I'm thinking, maybe one of the easiest ways to get a convincing character, whether you want to play an NPC caricature or just your own character, if you're not the GM, if you're the player and you want to play a character, you take advantage of the moment. This advice has to have come from many other gaming podcasts, and that is to take advantage and live in the moment.
The classic example of this, at least the one that I heard, where did I hear this? It wasn't in college. About 1,000 years ago, Herbert Berghoff Studios in the Village, where, whoever used to teach there, I'm not going to start name dropping, what a ridiculous thing, it's 2006, who cares? One of the instructors there told the story of Marlon Brando. Marlon Brando has been cited as one of the most brilliant actors of the cinema, and it's, I guess it's up for debate, I don't know. It's a matter of opinion. I guess mainly because of how he came across on camera. Now we're really comparing apples and oranges, but this is the example that was given of living in the moment. In the film On the Waterfront, stop me if you've heard this, in the film On the Waterfront, he plays a down-and-out dock worker that had aspirations of being a prize fighter and was a very good boxer, but just wasn't brought along or handled right or didn't catch the right breaks, and his older brother got into organized crime and corrupt unionism and all kinds of other garbage, and when he decided to go against the local power structure, Marlon Brando's character, toward the end of the film, Rod Steiger, who plays his older brother, draws a gun on him, and the scene is the camera on the two of them in the back seat of this big sedan that he's been picked up in. And he's sitting back there with Rod Steiger, who's playing his older brother. He pulls the gun and he looks and he just gives the classic line, oh, Charlie, Charlie, Charlie. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody, you know, that whole bit. And the story behind it is when somebody asked him about that, they said, that was so brilliant. The disappointment in your eyes and the organic nature of the way you just came out with it, you could tell that you were so devastated that your own brother would pull a gun on you. How did you capture that moment? How did you portray that? What preparation did you do for that? Turns out that he was just looking at Rod Steiger and delivering the lines as it went. And then at the point where Rod Steiger pulls out the gun, he's holding it wrong. He doesn't even have his finger through the trigger. He's just holding the gun wrong. And Marlon Brando is, while he's saying, Charlie, 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 what he's really thinking is, oh, Rodney, 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 you dip. Don't you know how to hold a pistol? So much for brilliance. So much for performance genius. But again, you could argue, in a way, there it is. Yeah, that is performance genius because he didn't bother. It's like you're going to give a realistic and believable performance if you just be you. They used to make us do an exercise where we didn't have to do an improvisation. We didn't have to do, when I say they, I'm talking about now college acting instruction. We weren't presenting a scene. It was just you get up, you partner with him, you partner with her, just sit up there and look at each other for 1 minute. Here's another exercise, and I incorporated this actually into a board game that's printable on the Anim 5 site. This one was a lot of fun, actually. It was an acting exercise to see what kind of control you'd have. As your character, whoever that character is, sit across from any other character in the party. This is warm-up stuff. This is relaxation stuff. Just to chill out, relax. By the way, when you do this, stay well away from the gaming table. As a matter of fact, if you have to, do it outside. It's probably best. Take a mouthful of water, both of you. Take a mouthful of water and just look at each other. Lots of luck. Take a big mouthful of water and just look at each other. And if you're gonna crack up, because I know you are, you're gonna crack up as your character. Another exercise, another loosening up exercise, particularly for vocalization, if you want to feel more natural with how you deliver your character's dialogue, whatever it might be for the moment, is to take a mouthful of peanut butter sandwich or 3 or 4 crackers or something. Stuff something in your mouth, a bag of peanuts. Something that requires you to chew and swallow and take breaths as you speak. Occasionally you might find yourself forcing interpretations of a line that you thought of. You might find yourself coming out with an almost a sing-songy kind of
artificial sounding delivery, and you would be surprised if you tried that same line or two or three while eating. Force yourself to speak it while eating, and you'll find that all kinds of organic moments spring out from that because of the fact that you can't control, or you're not controlling as much the way you deliver the line. So that's all warm-up stuff, and I'll be back in a bit.
Well, it appears as if this entire episode is going to be devoted to characterization, performance, and voice acting and role-playing games. I don't know that it could really be a weekly spot or anything like that. Again, your feedback on this, on whether you think any of this information is of any help at all, or if there are specific questions that, you know, I mean, I don't know what I could answer, really. There's certainly no way for anyone, not me or anyone else, to say, okay, here is how you do the accent of a merchant in China on the Street of the Vermilion Sparrow, or this is how you do a German accent, or any of that stuff. That's again, it's a musical thing. It's a tonal thing. You can hear it when it's right, and you can hear it when it's wrong. And you know what? If you're not good at it, who cares? If you're having fun, and that's the whole point of sitting down and doing what you do with your friends, if you're having fun, who cares whether you're good at it or not? Be bad at it loudly and have a blast. I can tell you one thing. When I was performing in the mid to late 80s, yeah, I could act all right. I could act fine. I could even carry a tune. I wouldn't call myself a singer by any stretch of the imagination, but I could stay at least in key. But I danced like a ruptured rooster with a concussion. It took me probably 5 times longer than everybody else just to learn the choreography for any of the pieces that I was in, because I was pathetic at it, let me tell you. A professional performer, you know, their livelihood depends on them at least having a modicum of talent to show somebody to get whatever job they're going after. And it's just not an easy life. Take a good look. I mean, you can tell just from memory, any of the folks out there that have watched Star Trek The Next Generation, you take a good close look at those folks first season. I mean, the first couple of episodes, they are svelte, they are slim, they fit those tight spandex, whatever the hell they dressed them in, just perfectly. And then, you know, just watch progressively as the seasons go by. Riker, Troy, even to a certain extent, Brent Spiner, and he had to concentrate on keeping himself the same weight, size, shape, etc., because he was supposed to be an unchanging android. All of them gained weight rapidly, and it's not because they were getting older. It's because they could afford to eat for a change. You're an actor, you can either perform, keep looking for work, wait tables, or you can give it up and get some kind of a job that pays you a living wage where you don't have to constantly be looking for where your next check's going to come from and maybe afford to eat. I speak from experience, and not long experience. There's people that have endured it all their lives and gotten nowhere. I wonder how they must feel when these little embryos come out of Hollywood after about 3 months of some acting school, get discovered by somebody, and all of a sudden they're on a nationally televised show. I wonder how some of these actors feel about that. I know I don't think I'd be able to handle it very well. Boy, is that off topic. Yeah, be bad at it. Or keep practicing it. You know, as part of your characterization. And I don't know, I'll take a wild guess. You're probably already doing this anyway. You just monitor yourself a little bit. You see, if it's important to you that you got that accent just a little bit better tonight, then relish it. Enjoy the progress. Enjoy the fact that you're not going after a job. You're not trying to make a film. You're just trying to see how well you can do this particular vocal characterization, or how much more vivid you can make a character, either through gestures or expressions or interesting choices. Well, this episode has been something of a revelation to me.
Normally, when I get started on politics or metaphysics or psychology or odd sociological phenomenon, I've got to keep mulling each sentence over in my mind, wondering what to say next, drawing a blank constantly. And here I find you get me started on acting and performing, and I can barely stop to breathe. The only thing I could really go on with now is just one story after another about experiences in theater, and I'm not all that positive that would be that interesting to hear, because, well, anyone could go on about all the experiences they've had in whatever profession they've had. Don't know how interesting that'd be. And it certainly isn't something that's relevant to all of humanity. I guess the only thing that really ties in this particular episode to what affects all of mankind, what is a universal aspect of the subject we've been talking about, I guess it's lying. Is there a culture that has no concept of deception? Any such thing as that? Are politicians natural actors? Do diplomats have to be brilliant performers in order to either cause war or prevent war or initiate favorable trade? If you're ambassador so-and-so in the court of whoever the hell, and whoever the hell's daughter is performing in her own play or doing some piece of music as part of your visit to entertain you and your entourage from whatever country you're from, how many eyes are on you as the ambassador to see just how sincerely you enjoy her performance and how enraptured you are of her talents and the obvious cultural superiority of this country you're now visiting because of it? Even though you watch the performance and inside your mind you're thinking this has the same cultural value as watching a live alligator swung against a brick wall. I have no idea why I said that. I don't know where that came from. But yeah, I mean, acting is everywhere. Lying is everywhere. A good part of it takes place in our everyday lives, but I won't go into that because I think I kind of pretty much covered that in episode 6. Talking specifically about role-playing and at a gaming table as an artistic event and role-playing all day, every day in our regular lives. Okay, I think it's going to be time for a wrap-up soon. Okay, I think that just about covers episode 14, which I suppose we can entitle, Who Does Adam Fly Think He Is This Week? So 3 or 4 weeks ago, he thought he was a physics instructor. He thought he could give people all kinds of information about quantum physics. A week before that, he was a theologian. A week before that, he was a master of literature. A week before that, he was... honestly, folks, I really hope I don't come off as trying to sound like some kind of a super expert. Like I said, I'm asking questions, and I like questions that are tough to answer or impossible to answer. Have you got any? Come on, send them in. Write them in. They're easy. I got audio too. Sarah proved it. So drop an audio note. What do you want to bet the executives when they were trying to think of what to call that company? Said, well, what sounds good with audio? What's going to be fun to say? Let's sit back and listen to them all say, audio, audio. Yeah, they're having a laugh. They're having a good time on us. And making money. Well, I wish I had thought of it. Well, even if I had, I wouldn't have been able to afford to start it. See what I mean by tangents? I didn't even start talking about that. What did I start talking about? You want to learn about acting as a profession? Obviously, you got to go to somebody who is an actor and has the cojones to stick with it and actually try and make a living at it, because it really is tough. My experiences are from long ago. I'm still technically in the theatrical profession, but I'm just going to play a piece of music now. And on the other side of it, I'll be saying my goodbyes. So there we are. Back after the musical break.
And so, with the conclusion of that Amiga tune, yes, that was a piece of music composed on an Amiga ages ago, that also brings to a close episode 14. And three quick points I want to make just before I say goodbye. One, why do I do all the shopping? How come I'm the one that's always going shopping? I'll tell you why, because Mrs. Animal 5 doesn't get any toys and candy. When she goes shopping, all she brings home is food, laundry detergent, household items, boring stuff. I know where the good stuff is. I mean, if we're going to go out and spend money, might as well have toys and candy. Two, name of that show that butler from the music commercial was on was Family Affair. Ugh, not even going to go into it. Actor's name, I believe, was John Williams. And three, I forgot. 1 second. Oh yeah, now I remember. I didn't really forget. I just repressed it from my mind. I listened to all this that went before, all my ramblings, and I've given myself the impression that what you've been listening to are the whinings of a frustrated actor. Well, I don't know. Maybe I am a frustrated actor. Well, the difference is, I went for it, got there, did it, and discovered that it was not the life for me. So I had plenty of time to get frustrated while I was doing it. If I'm frustrated now, well, so be it. Maybe that's why I podcast and do mini dramas. I'm a frustrated actor. Or not. I don't know. You decide. Write in, tell me, hey, you frustrated actor. I'll read it on the next show. Speaking of that one, of course, I'll explain in episode 15 why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes well with you. Thank you very much for listening. I know this was a long one, so thank you especially. And best of days.